near him. Fareed looked at the tent where Meggie slept. He thought he could hear her crying, but he dared not go to her. She hadn't yet forgiven him for persuading her father to do that deal with Orpheus, and Doria was sitting outside her tent. He was to be found near Meggie a good deal too often for Fareed's liking. But luckily, he appeared to understand as little about girls as his strong brother. The men back from Umbra were sitting around the fire, heads bent. Some of them didn't even take off the women's clothes they had been wearing. But the Black Prince gave them no time to drown their fears for the future in wine. He sent them out hunting. They would need good stocks of provisions if they were to hide the children of Umbra from the Piper. Dried meat, warm furs. But that didn't interest Fareed. He no more belonged to the robbers than he had to Orpheus. He didn't even belong to Meggie. He belonged with only one person, and he had to keep away from him, for fear of bringing him to his death. Darkness was just falling, and the robbers were still smoking meat and stretching skins between the trees, when Gwyn came scurrying out of the forest. Fareed thought the marten was Jink until he saw the greying muzzle. Yes, it was Gwyn, all right. Since Dustfinger's death, he had looked at Fareed like an enemy. But tonight he nibbled his calves the way he used to when he wanted to play, and chattered until Fareed followed him. The marten was quick, too quick even for Fareed, who could outrun most people. But Gwyn kept stopping to wait for him with his tail twitching impatiently, leaving Fareed to follow as fast as the darkness allowed, because he knew who had sent the marten. They found Dustfinger where the castle walls became the city boundary of Umbra, and the mountainside on which the city stood rose so steeply that no other houses could stand there. Nothing but thorny bushes covered the slope, and the castle wall towered up without any windows, forbidding as a clenched fist, broken by only a few barred slits that let just enough air into the dungeons for the prisoners not to stifle to death before they were executed. No one stayed long in the castle dungeons of Umbra. Sentences were quickly passed, and executions quickly carried out. Why feed someone for long if you were going to hang him anyway? The date of the Blue Jay's death depended only on the judge who was coming from the far side of the forest, especially for him. 5 days, so the whisper went, it would take the Adderhead 5 days to reach Umbra in his black-draped coach. And no one knew whether the Blue Jay would live as long as a single day after his arrival. Dustfinger stood with his shoulders back against the wall, and his head bent, as if he were listening. The deep shadows cast by the castle made him invisible to the guards pacing back and forth on the battlements. Dustfinger turned only when Gwyn bounded toward him. Fareed looked anxiously up at the guards before running to him, but they weren't looking for a boy or a man on his own. One man wouldn't be able to set the Blue Jay free. No, the milksop soldiers were waiting for the arrival of many men, men coming out of the nearby forest, or using ropes to help them down the steep slope above the castle, although the Piper must know that even the Black Prince wouldn't venture to storm Umbra Castle. The sky above the towers shone with the dark green of Sootbird's fire. The milksop was celebrating. The Piper had ordered all the minstrels among the strolling players to compose songs about his own cunning and the defeat of the Blue Jay, but very few had obeyed. Most of them kept silent, and their silence sang another song, a song of the sadness in Umbra and the tears of the women who had their children back but had lost their hope. "Well, what do you think of Sootbird's fire?" Dustfinger whispered, as Fareed came to lean against the castle wall beside him. "Our friend has learned a few things, wouldn't you say?" "He's still useless," Fareed whispered back, and Dustfinger smiled, but his face grew grave again as he looked up at the windowless walls. "It's nearly midnight," he said quietly. "At this time, the Piper likes to show prisoners his hospitality with fists, clubs, and boots." He laid his hands on the wall and passed them over it as if the stones could tell him what was going on in the cells behind them. "He's not with him yet," he whispered, "but it won't be long now." "How do you know?" Sometimes it seemed to Fareed as if someone else had come back from the dead, not the man he had known. "Well, Silvertongue, Blue Jay, whatever you like to call him, Dustfinger whispered, since his voice brought me back. I've known what he feels, as if death had transplanted his heart into my breast. Now, catch me a fairy, or the piper will half kill him before sunrise. Bring me one of the rainbow-colored kind. Orpheus has given them his own vanity, which comes in handy. You can get them to do anything for a few compliments. The fairy was soon found. Orpheus's fairies were all over the place, and although winter didn't make them as drowsy as Fenolio's blue fairies, it was child's play to pluck one from her nest at this hour of the night. She bit Farid, but he blew in her face, as Dustfinger had taught him, until she was gasping for air and forgot all about biting. Dustfinger whispered something to her, and next moment the tiny thing was fluttering up to the barred slits in the wall and disappearing through one of them.
What did you tell her?
Above them, Sootbird's venomous fire went on devouring the night. It swallowed up the sky, the stars, and the moon, and the smoke hanging in the air was so acrid that Farid's eyes were streaming. Oh, just that I promised the Blue Jay I'd send the most beautiful fairy of all to visit him in his dark dungeon. And by way of thanks, she'll whisper him the news that the Adderhead will reach Umbra in 5 days' time, even if the moss women pave his way here with curses, and that meanwhile we'll try to keep the piper's mind occupied so that he can't spend too much time beating up his prisoners. Dustfinger clenched his left hand into a fist. You haven't yet asked me why I sent for you, he said, blowing gently into the fist he had made. I thought you might like to see this. He laid his fist against the castle wall, and fiery spiders scuttled out from between his fingers. They hurried up the stones, more and more of them, as many as if they had been born there in Dustfinger's hand. The piper's afraid of spiders, he whispered. He fears them more than swords and knives, and if these creep into his fine clothes, he may forget just for a while how much he enjoys beating his prisoners at night. Farid clenched his own fist.
How do you make them?
I don't know, which I'm afraid means I can't teach you any more than I can teach you this. Dustfinger placed his hands together. Farid heard him whispering, but he couldn't make out the words. When a fiery blue jay flew out of Dustfinger's hands and soared into the night sky on wings of blue and white fire, he felt a pang of envy like a wasp's sting.
Oh, show me, he whispered. Please, let me try at least.
Dustfinger looked at him thoughtfully. One of the guards above them was raising the alarm. The fiery spiders had reached the castle battlements. Death taught me the trick of it, Farid, he said softly.
Well, so I was dead too, like you, although not for so long?
Dustfinger laughed. He laughed so loudly that a sentry looked down, and he quickly drew Farid back with him into the blackest shadows. You're right, I'd quite forgotten, he whispered, as the guards on the wall shouted in confusion and shot arrows at the fiery jay. The arrow smoldered and went out among its feathers. Very well, copy me. Try this. Farid quickly curved his fingers, feeling the excitement he always felt when he was going to learn something new about fire. It wasn't easy to repeat the strange words that Dustfinger whispered, and Farid's heart leaped when he really did feel a fiery tingling between his fingers. Next moment, spiders were swarming all over the wall from his hand too, their burning bodies hurrying up the stones like an army of sparks. He smiled proudly at Dustfinger. But when he tried the blue jay, only a few pale moths fluttered out from between his fingers.
Don't look so disappointed, whispered Dustfinger, as he sent two more blue jays flying into the night.
There's plenty more to learn, but we'd better hide from our silver-nosed friend now. Umbra Castle wore a burning coat as they made their way through the trees, and Sootbird's fire had gone out. The sky belonged to the fire conjured up by Dustfinger. The piper sent out patrols, but Dustfinger made the flames give birth to wolves and big cats, snakes slithering out of the branches, fiery moths that flew in the faces of the men-at-arms. The forest at the foot of the castle seemed to be all aflame, but the fire did not take hold. and Farid and his master were shadows among all the red, untouched by the fear they were spreading. Finally, the piper had water poured from the battlements. It froze to ice in the branches of the trees, but Dustfinger's fire burned on, shaping new creatures all the time, and died down only in the morning, like a spectre of the night.
The fiery blue jays, however, went on circling in the air above Umbra, and when the milksop sent his hounds into the forest where the flames were now extinguished, fiery hares threw them off any track they found.
But Farid sat with Dustfinger in a thicket of thorn apple and brownie thorn, feeling happiness warm his heart. It was so good to be near Dustfinger again, as he had been in the old days, during all the nights when he had watched over him or kept him from bad dreams. Now, however, there didn't seem to be anything he had to protect him from.
Except yourself, Farid, he thought.
And his happiness was gone like the fiery creatures that Dustfinger had conjured up to protect the blue jay.
What's the matter?
Dustfinger looked at him, as if it wasn't only Silvertongue's thoughts he could read. Then he took Farid's hand and blew gently into it, until a woman made of white fire rose from his fingers.
They're not as bad as you think, Dustfinger whispered to him, and if they come for me again, it won't be because of you. Understand?
What do you mean?
Farid's heart missed a beat.
Are they going to come for you again? Why? Soon?
The white woman on his hand changed into a moth, fluttered away, and dissolved in the grey light of dawn.
That depends on the blue jay.
What does?
Dustfinger placed a warning hand over his mouth and pushed the thorny tendrils aside. Soldiers had taken up positions under the window slits of the dungeons. They were staring at the forest, eyes wide with fear. Sootbird was with them. He was examining the castle wall as if he could read in the stones how Dustfinger had set the night on fire.
Look at him, Dustfinger whispered. He hates the fire, and the fire hates him.
But Farid didn't want to talk about Sootbird. He reached for Dustfinger's arm.
They mustn't come to take you away again. Please.
Dustfinger looked at him. His eyes were so different since he had come back. There was no fear in them now, only the old watchfulness.
I'll say it again. It all depends on the blue jay. So help me to protect him, because he's going to need protection. 5 days and nights in the Piper's power, that's a long time. I think we'll all be glad when the Adderhead finally arrives.
Farid wanted to ask more questions, but he saw in Dustfinger's face that he would get no further answers.
How about her ugliness? Don't you believe she can protect him?
Do you? Dustfinger asked back.
A fairy was struggling through the thorny undergrowth. She almost tore her wings on the branches, but finally, exhausted, she perched on Dustfinger's knee. It was the fairy he had sent out to look for the blue jay. She had found him and was bringing back his thanks. Nor did she forget to mention that he had assured her that she was indeed the most beautiful fairy he had ever set eyes on.
Chapter 39. Stolen Children.
It was snowing, tiny, icy flakes, and Meggie wondered whether her father could see the snowflakes falling from wherever he was held captive. No, she told herself, the dungeons of Umbra lie too deep under the castle, and the idea that Mo was missing his first sight of snow in the Inkworld made her almost as sad as knowing that he was a prisoner. Dustfinger was protecting him, as the Black Prince had so often assured her. Batista and Roxanne kept saying so as well. But Meggie could think of nothing but the Piper, and how frail and young Violante had looked beside him. The Adderhead was only 2 days' journey away now, so Nettle had said yesterday. 2 days, and everything would be decided. 2 days. The strong man drew Meggie to his side and pointed through the trees. Two women were looking for a way through the snow-covered thickets. They had a couple of boys and a girl with them. The children of Umbra had been disappearing one by one ever since the blue jay gave himself up. Their mothers took them out into the fields, down to the river to do their laundry, into the forest to look for firewood, and came back alone. There were 4 places where the prince's men waited for the children. News of their whereabouts was passed on from mouth to mouth, and there was a woman as well as a robber waiting at each of these places, so that it wouldn't be too hard for the children to let go of their mother's hands. Risa, Batista, and Gecko were receiving them at the infirmary run by the Barn Owl. Roxanne and Elfbane waited at the place where the healers gathered the bark of oak trees. Two more women met children by the river, and Meggie, with Doria and the strong man, waited for them in a charcoal burner's abandoned hut, not far from the road to Umbra. The three children hesitated when they saw the strong man, but their mothers led them on, and when Doria caught a couple of snowflakes on his outstretched tongue, the youngest, a girl of about 5, began giggling. "Suppose we just make the Piper angry again by hiding them with you?" asked the child's mother. "Suppose he's given up any idea of taking the children away now the Blue Jay is his prisoner. It was all about the Blue Jay, wasn't it?" Meggie could have hit her for the coldness in her voice.
"Yes, and this is his daughter," said the strong man, putting a protective arm around Meggie's shoulders. "So don't talk as if you didn't care what became of him. You'd never have gotten your child back but for her father. Have you forgotten that already? But the Adderhead will still need children for his mines, and yours would be easy prey."
"That's his daughter, the witch."
The other woman drew her children close to her, but the girl looked curiously at Meggie.
"You sound like the Adder's men."
The strong man held Meggie more firmly, as if to ward off the words. "What's the matter with you?
Do you want to know your children are safe, or don't you? You can always take them back to Umbra and hope the Piper doesn't come knocking at your door."
"But where are you taking them?"
The younger woman had tears in her eyes.
"If I told you, you'd be able to give it away."
The strong man put the smaller boy up on his shoulders, as if he weighed no more than a fairy.
"Can we come too?"
"No, we can't feed so many. It will be difficult enough to fill the children's bellies."
"And how long do you mean to hide them for?"
How desperate every word sounded.
"Until the Blue Jay has killed the Adderhead."
The women looked at Meggie.
"How can he possibly do that?"
"He'll kill him. You wait and see," replied the strong man.
And his voice sounded so confident that for a precious moment, even Meggie forgot all her fears for Mo. But the moment passed, and once again she felt the snow on her skin, as cold as the end of all things. Doria put the little girl on his back and smiled at Meggie. He was tireless in his efforts to cheer her up. He brought her berries, hard with frost, flowers covered with rime, the last flowers of the year, and made her forget her troubles by asking her about the world she came from. She was beginning to miss him when he wasn't near her. The little girl cried when the women left, but Meggie stroked her hair and told her what Batista had said about the snow. Many of the snowflakes, he had told her, were tiny elves who kissed your face with icy lips before melting on your warm skin. The child stared up at the whirling snow, and Meggie went on talking, letting the words comfort her too, while the world around turned white, letting herself go back to the days when Mo used to tell her stories, before he was part of a story himself. It was a long time since Meggie had been able to say whether it was her story as well. The snow did not fall for long, and left only a fine light dusting on the cold ground. 12 more women brought their children to the abandoned charcoal burner's hut, their faces full of anxiety and concern, and full of doubt, too. Were they doing the right thing? Some of the children didn't even look back at their mothers as the women left. Others ran after them, and 2 cried so hard that their mothers took them away again, back to Umbra, where the Piper was waiting for them like a silver spider in its web. By the time darkness fell, 19 children stood under the trees with their powdering of snow, huddled together like a flock of goslings. The strong man looked like a giant beside them, as he signaled to them to go with him. Doria conjured acorns out of their little noses and plucked coins from their hair when one of them started crying. The strong man showed them how he listened to the birds and let 3 children ride on his shoulders all at once. As for Meggie, she told them stories as darkness fell over them, stories Mo had told her so often that she thought she heard his voice with every word she spoke. They were all exhausted by the time they reached the robbers' camp. The place was teeming with children. Maggie tried to count them, but soon gave up. How were the robbers to fill so many mouths, when the Black Prince could hardly feed his own men? What Snapper and Gecko thought of all this showed only too clearly in their faces. Nursemaids, that was the whisper going around the camp. Is this what we went into the forest for? Snapper, Gecko, Elfbane, Woodenfoot, Wayfarer, Blackbeard, many of them were saying so. But who was the slightly built man with the gentle face standing beside Snapper, looking around as if he had never seen his surroundings before? He looked like... No, it couldn't be true. Maggie rubbed her eyes. She was obviously so tired that she was seeing ghosts. But suddenly, two strong arms went around her, hugging her so hard that she gasped for air. Why, just look at you! You're almost as tall as me now, you shameless girl! Maggie turned. Eleanor! What was happening? Had she lost her mind? Had it all been nothing but a dream, and now she was waking up? Would the trees dissolve next? Would everything disappear? The robbers? The children? And she'd see Mo standing beside her bed, asking if she intended to sleep right through breakfast? Maggie pressed her face into Eleanor's dress. It was velvet, and looked like a theatrical costume. Yes, she was dreaming. Definitely. But then, what was still real? Wake up, Maggie, she told herself. Come on, wake up! The slightly built stranger standing next to Snapper smiled shyly at her as he held his twisted spectacle frame up to his eyes. And yes, it really was Darius. Eleanor hugged her again, and Maggie began to cry. She wept into Eleanor's peculiar dress, shedding all the tears she had been holding back since Mo rode to Umbra Castle. Yes, yes, I know, it's just terrible, said Eleanor, as she awkwardly stroked Maggie's hair. You poor thing! I've already given that scribbler fellow a piece of my mind, conceited old fool. But you wait! Your father will show that silver-nosed fiddler a thing or two. He's the piper, Maggie had to laugh, although the tears went on running down her face. The piper, Eleanor! Well, whatever. How's anyone supposed to remember all these strange names? Eleanor looked around her. That Fenolio deserves to be hung, drawn, and quartered for all this, but of course he doesn't see it that way. I'm glad we'll be able to keep an eye on him now. He refused to let Minerva come here on her own, I suppose just because he couldn't stand the thought of not having her to cook and mend for him. You mean Fenolio's here too? Maggie wiped her tears away. Yes, but where's your mother? I can't find her anywhere. Maggie's face seemed to show that she still wasn't on good terms with Risa. But Batista came between them before Eleanor could ask her about that.
Blue Jay's daughter, will you introduce me to your splendidly dressed friend? He bowed to Eleanor. To what guild of the strolling players do you belong, gracious lady? Let me guess, you're an actress. Your voice would surely fill any marketplace.
Eleanor stared at him in such horror that Maggie quickly came to her aid.
This is Eleanor Batista, my mother's aunt.
Ah, one of the Blue Jays' family.
Batista bowed even lower.
Presumably that information will keep Snapper there from wringing your neck. He's trying to convince the Black Prince that you and this stranger, he indicated Darius, who joined them with a shy smile, are spies of the Pipers.
Eleanor spun around so abruptly that she drove her elbow into Darius's stomach.
The Black Prince?
She blushed like a girl as she saw him and his bear standing with Snapper.
Oh, he's magnificent, she breathed, and so is his bear. The bear looks just the way I imagined him. Ah, this is all so wonderful, so incredibly wonderful.
Maggie felt her tears drying up. She was so glad Eleanor was here, so very glad indeed. Chapter 40, A New Cage. This time, they came earlier than on the nights before. Night was only just falling outside. Not that it was ever light in Mo's cell, but night brought a different kind of darkness, and with it came the piper. Mo sat up as straight as he could in chains, and prepared to be kicked and struck. If only he hadn't felt so stupid, so infinitely stupid, the fool who of his own free will had stumbled into his enemy's net. Not a robber any more, not a bookbinder, only a fool. The cells in the dungeons of Ombra were no more comfortable than the cells in the tower of the Castle of Night. In these dark holes, hardly high enough for a man to stand up, the same fear lurked as in all dungeons. Yes, the fear was back. It had been waiting for him at the gates. It had almost choked him when the milksop's men had bound his hands. Captured. Helpless. Think about the children, Mortimer. Only the memory of their faces soothed him when he cursed himself for what he had done and endured the blows and kicks that the night brought with it. Dustfinger's fire at least made the piper leave him in peace from time to time, but it also infuriated Silvernose more and more. In his mind, Mo still heard the voice of the fairy who had fluttered up onto his shoulder that first night. He still saw the fiery spiders scuttering into the piper's velvet garments. Mo had laughed at him for the panic in his face, but he had paid for that several times. 2 more days, Mortimer. 2 days and 2 nights. Then the Adderhead will arrive. And then what? Yes, he was a fool to hope he might yet be able to give Death and her pale daughters what they demanded. Would Risa realize that he had also ridden to the castle for Meggie's sake when the white women came for their daughter? Would she understand that he hadn't told her anything about it so that fear for Meggie wouldn't eat away at her own heart? The 2 soldiers who entered his cell had soot on their hands and faces. They always came in pairs, but where was their silver-snouted master? Without a word, they hauled Mo to his feet. The chains were heavy and cut into his skin. "The piper's going to be visiting you in another cell today," they muttered to him, "one that your friend's fire can't find." They went farther down, down and down, past holes from which the smell of rotting flesh rose. Once Mo thought he saw a fiery snake creeping through the darkness, but one of his guards hit him when he turned to look at it. The cell into which they pushed him was much larger than the one he had been kept in before. There was dried blood on the walls, and the air was both cold and musty. The piper kept him waiting, and when he finally arrived, followed by 2 more soldiers, he too had soot on his face. The men who had dragged Mo here made way respectfully for their master, but Mo saw how anxiously they looked around, as if they were waiting for Dustfinger's fiery spiders to crawl out of the walls any minute now. Mo could sense Dustfinger searching for him. It was as if his thoughts were putting out feelers for Mo, but the dungeons in Ombra lay almost as deep as those in the Castle of Night. Perhaps tonight he would use the knife that Batista had sewn into the hem of his shirt, although his hands hurt so much that he probably wouldn't even be able to hold it, let alone stab with it. But it felt good to have it with him when the fear became unbearable. The fear and the hatred.
"Your fire-eating friend is getting bolder all the time, but that won't help you tonight, Blue Jay. I'm tired of it."
The piper's face was white under the soot that blackened even his silver nose. One of the soldiers hit Mo in the face. 2 more days. The piper looked at his soot-smeared gloves with distaste.
"All Ombra is laughing at me. Look at the piper," they whisper. "The fire dancer is running rings around his men, and the Black Prince is hiding the children from him. The Blue Jay will save us after all. Well, enough of that. When I've finished with you tonight, they won't think so any more."
He came so close to Mo that his nose was almost prodding his enemy's face.
"What about it? Don't you want to use your wonderful voice to call for help? Call all your ragged friends. The prince and his bear, the fire dancer, or how about Violante? Her hairy servant is always on my heels, snooping, and hardly an hour goes by without her telling me that you're no use to her father unless you're alive. But these days, her father is nowhere near as terrifying as he used to be. You've made sure of that yourself."
Violante. Mo had seen her only once, when they were dragging him off his horse in the castle courtyard. How could he have been stupid enough to believe she'd be able to protect him? He was lost. And Meggie with him. Despair rose in him, such black despair that he felt sick, and the piper smiled.
Ah, you're afraid. I like that. I ought to write a song about it. But from now on, the only songs sung will be about me. Dark songs, the kind I enjoy. Very dark.
With a foolish grin, one of the soldiers went up to Mo, holding a stick studded with iron.
The Blue Jay will run away from them again, that's what they say.
The piper took a step back.
But you're never going to run away from anything anymore. From now on, you're going to crawl, Blue Jay. Crawl to me.
The two men who had brought him here seized Mo. They forced him up against the blood-stained wall, while the third man raised the iron-studded stick. The piper stroked his silver nose.
You'll need your hands for the book, Blue Jay. But why would the adder mind if I break your legs? And even if he did, as I was saying, the adderhead's not what he used to be.
Lost. Oh, God, Meggie, he thought. Had he ever told her such a terrible story as this?
No, Mo, no fairy tales, she always used to say when she was little. They're much too sad.
Not as sad as this one.
What a pity my father was unable to hear your little speech for himself, Piper.
Violante did not raise her voice much, but the piper whipped around as if she had shouted at him. The soldier with a silly grin lowered the stick, and the others retreated, making way for the Adderhead's daughter. Violante was almost invisible in the black dress she wore. How could they call her ugly? At this moment, Mo felt he had never seen a more beautiful face. He hoped the piper didn't notice how his legs were trembling. He grudged the silver-nosed man that satisfaction. A small, furry face appeared beside Violante. Tullio. Had he fetched her? Her ugliness had half a dozen of her beardless soldiers with her, too. They looked so young and vulnerable compared to the piper's men, but their young hands held crossbows, weapons to be respected even by seasoned men-at-arms. But the piper quickly recovered.
"What do you want here?" he snarled at Violante. "I'm only making sure your precious prisoner doesn't fly the coop again. It's bad enough for his fiery friend to make us all a laughingstock. Your father's not going to like that one bit."
"And you are not going to like what I'm about to do."
There was no emotion at all in Violante's voice.
"Tie them up," she ordered her soldiers. Take the chains off the Blue Jay and tie him up too, but so that he can still ride.
The piper reached for his sword, but three of Violante's young men overpowered him and dragged him down. Mo could physically feel their hatred for the man. They'd happily have killed the piper, he saw it on their young faces, and obviously the piper's men saw it too, for they let themselves be tied up without resisting.
You ugly little snake!
The piper's noseless voice sounded even stranger when he raised it.
So the milksop was right. You're hand in glove with that pack of robbers. What do you want? The throne of Umbra, and perhaps your father's too?
Violante's face was as still as if Balbulus had painted it.
I want just one thing, she replied. I want to deliver the Blue Jay to my father intact, so that he can still be useful to him. And in return for that service, I will indeed demand the throne of Umbra. Why not? I have 10 times more right to it than the milksop.
The soldier who removed Mo's chains was the boy who had opened the sarcophagus for him in Cosimo's vault.
I'm sorry, he murmured as he tied him up. He didn't pull the rope very tight around Mo's arms, which were chafed and sore, but it still hurt, and all the time Mo never took his eyes off Violante.
He could hear Snapper's hoarse voice in his ears only too clearly.
She'll sell you for the throne of Umbra.
Where are you taking him?
The piper spat in the face of the soldier tying him up.
Even if you hide him with the giants, I'll find you.
Oh, I've no intention of hiding him, replied Violante with composure. I shall take him to my mother's castle. My father knows the way. And if he is to agree to my conditions, He must go there. I'm sure you'll tell him that.
She'll sell you.
Violante's glance moved over Mo as indifferently as if they had never met before. The piper kicked Mo with his bound legs as Violante's soldiers led him out of the cell, but what was a kick compared to the iron-studded stick he had been about to use?
"You're a dead man, Blue Jay!"
he shouted after him before one of Violante's soldiers gagged him.
"Dead!"
"Not yet," Mo wanted to reply. "Not yet." A maid was waiting outside the barred door. Only when Mo passed her did he see that it was Brianna. So Violante really had taken her back. She nodded to him before following her mistress. Three guards lay unconscious in the passage. Violante stepped over them and followed the corridor down which Mo had been brought, to a narrow tunnel branching off to the left. Tullio hurried ahead, and her soldiers followed in silence, with Mo between them. Her mother's castle. Whatever Violante's intentions, he was very thankful to her that he still had the use of his legs. The tunnel seemed endless. How did the Adderhead's daughter know so much about the secret ways around this castle?
I read about this tunnel.
Violante turned to him as if she had heard his thoughts. Or perhaps he was thinking out loud after all those hours alone in the dark.
Fortunately for us, I am the only person who uses the castle library,
Violante went on. How she was looking at him, as if to determine whether he still trusted her. Oh, yes, she was like her father. She loved the game of fear and power, just as the Adderhead did. The constant measuring of her strength against others, even to the point of death. So why did he still trust her all the same, in spite of his helplessness? Two more tunnels branched off into the darkness, just as narrow as the first. When Tullio looked inquiringly at her, Violante pointed without hesitation to the one on the left. She was a strange woman, so much older than her years. Such coldness, such self-control. Never forget whose daughter she is. The Black Prince had so often urged Mo to remember that, and he was beginning to understand the warning better now. Violante was surrounded by the same aura of cruelty that he had felt in the company of her father, the same impatience with others, the same belief that she was cleverer than most people, better, more important. Your Highness, it was the soldier behind Mo. They all treated their mistress with great respect. What about your son? Violante did not turn as she replied,
Jacopo stays here. He'd only give us away.
Her voice was cold. Did you have to learn from your own parents how to love your child? If so, he supposed it was no wonder the Adderhead's daughter didn't know much about it. Mo felt wind on his face, air that smelled of more than just earth. The tunnel was getting wider. He heard rushing water, and as they came out into the open, he saw Umbra high above him. Snow was falling from the black sky, and the river glinted beyond almost leafless bushes. Horses were waiting by the bank, guarded by a soldier, but a boy was holding a knife to the soldier's neck. Farid. Dustfinger stood beside him, sparks in his snow-dusted hair, the two martins at his feet. When Violante's soldiers aimed their crossbows at him, he only smiled. Where are you taking your prisoner, Adder's daughter? He asked. I'm the shadow he brought back from the dead with him, and his shadow follows him wherever he goes. Tullio hid behind Violante's black skirts, as if he were afraid Dustfinger would send him up in flames at any moment. But Violante signaled to her soldiers to lower their crossbows. Brianna just looked at her father.
He's not my prisoner, said Violante, but I don't want my father hearing that from one of his countless spies, hence the bonds. Shall I remove them all the same, Blue Jay?
She brought out a knife from under her cloak. Mo exchanged a glance with Dustfinger. He was glad to see him, although his heart still had to accustom itself to that feeling. The sight of Dustfinger had filled him with very different emotions for too many years. But since death had touched them both, they seemed to be made of the same flesh and the same story. Perhaps there was only a single story anyway. Don't trust her, said Dustfinger's glance. And Mo knew that the Fire Dancer would read Mo's own unspoken answer in his face.
I must. I'll keep the bonds on, he said,
and Violante hid the knife among the folds of her dress again. Snowflakes clung to its black fabric like tiny feathers.
I am taking the Blue Jay to the castle where my mother grew up, she said. I can protect him there. Here I can't.
The castle in the lake. Dustfinger took a bag from his belt and gave it to Farid.
That's a long way. A good 4 days' ride on horseback.
You've heard of the castle?
Who hasn't? But it was abandoned many years ago. Have you ever been there?
Violante's chin jutted so defiantly that she reminded Mo of Meggie again.
No, I never have, but I remember all my mother told me about it, and I've read everything that's ever been written about the castle. I know it better than if I had been there.
Dustfinger merely looked at her. Then he shrugged his shoulders.
If you say so. The Piper isn't there, that's one good thing, and it's said to be easy to defend.
He scrutinized Violante's young soldiers, as if counting their years of life.
Yes, very likely the Blue Jay will be safer there.
The snowflakes settling on Mo's bound hands cooled his sore skin. He would hardly be able to use them unless he could move them more freely, at least at night.
And you're sure your father will follow us to the castle?
His voice sounded as if the despair of the dungeon still clung to it. Violante smiled.
Oh, yes, indeed he will. He'll follow you anywhere, and he will bring the White Book with him.
The White Book. The snow fell as if to paint the whole world as white as its empty pages. Winter had come. Your heartbeats are numbered, Mortimer, he told himself. And Meggie's. Meggie's. How could he still love this world in spite of everything? How was it that his eyes couldn't see enough of the distant trees, so much taller than the trees he had climbed as a boy, and his gaze sought fairies and glassmen as if they'd always been a part of his world?
Remember, Mortimer, there was once a very different world, a voice whispered inside him.
But whatever it whispered, it was wasting its time. Even his own name sounded strange and unreal. And he knew that if there had been a hand trying to close Fenolio's book forever, he would have stopped it.
We have no horse for you, Fire Dancer.
Violante's voice was hostile. She didn't like Dustfinger. Well, he had felt just the same himself for a long time, hadn't he? Dustfinger gave such a mocking laugh that Violante just stared at him even more coldly.
Ride on, I'll find you, he said.
He was gone. Even before Violante's men brought Mo a horse, and so was Farid. There were only a few sparks still left glowing in the snow where they had been standing. Mo saw the awe on the faces of Violante's soldiers, as if they had seen a ghost. And perhaps that wasn't too far off as a name for a man who had come back from the dead. Still nothing was moving in the castle. No sentry raised the alarm as the first of the young soldiers rode his horse into the river. No one shouted from the battlements that the Blue Jay was escaping again. Umbra was asleep, and the snow covered it with a white blanket, while Dustfinger's fiery Blue Jays still circled above the rooftops.
Chapter 41. Pictures from the Ashes. The cave that Mo and the Black Prince had found long before Sootbird staged his show was 2 hours' journey north of Umbra on foot. That was a long way for children to walk, and winter had come to the Inkworld, with rain that turned to snow more and more often. White moths were suddenly hanging from the bare branches like leaves made of ice, and grey-feathered owls had begun hunting the fairies.
"My own fairies sleep at this time of year," Fenolio had said in self-defense,
when Despina began crying because an owl had torn two of the tiny creatures to pieces before her eyes.
"But the silly creatures Orpheus has made flutter around as if they'd never heard of winter."
The Black Prince led them uphill and downhill, through thickets and stony debris, along such overgrown paths that they usually had to carry the smaller children. Meggie's back was soon aching, but Eleanor strode on as if she couldn't wait to see as much as possible of this strange world, although she went to a great deal of trouble to conceal her delight from the creator of the whole thing. Fenolio was walking right behind them most of the time, with Risa and Darius. The little girl Risa was carrying looked so like Meggie that whenever Meggie herself turned around to her mother, it was like looking back to a time that had never been. Mo used to carry her when she was little, always Mo. But when she saw Risa pressing her face into the little girl's hair, Meggie wished it had been different. Perhaps then Mo's absence wouldn't have hurt her quite so much. When Risa felt sick halfway to the cave, Roxanne told her not to carry any of the children anymore.
"Be careful," Meggie heard her say. "You don't want to be telling your husband you've lost his child when he comes back, do you?"
It was obvious now that Risa was pregnant, and sometimes Meggie wanted to put her hand on the place where the child was growing, but she didn't. Tears had sprung to Darius's eyes when he heard about the pregnancy, and Eleanor had cried,
"Well, everything has to turn out all right now,"
hugging Risa so hard that she must almost have squashed the unborn child. But Meggie kept catching herself thinking, "I don't need any sister or any brother either. I just want my father back." However, when one of the little boys she had been carrying on her back thanked her with a smacking kiss on her cheek, she felt, for the first time, and quite unexpectedly, that she was looking forward to the new baby, and she began imagining what it would be like to have a brother or sister putting small fingers into her own hand. They were all glad that Roxanne had come with them. Her son had not been among the children taken captive by the Piper and Sootbird, but she had brought Jehan along all the same. Roxanne was wearing her long black hair loose again, as the minstrel women did. She smiled more often these days, too, and when some of the children started crying because it was such a long way, Meggie heard her sing for the first time. She sang very quietly, but it was enough for Meggie to understand what Batista had once said. "When Roxanne sings, she takes all the sadness from your heart and makes music out of it." How could she be so happy when Dustfinger wasn't with her? "Because now she knows that he will always come back to her," Batista said. Did Risa know the same of Mo? Meggie didn't see the entrance to the cave until she was very close to it. Tall fir trees hid it, thorn apple and bushes with white down hanging from their branches, long and soft as human hair. Meggie's skin was still itching hours after she had followed Doria through the dense thickets. The crack in the rock leading to the cavern inside was so narrow that the strong man had to duck his head and squeeze through it sideways, but the cave itself was tall as a church inside, and the children's voices, echoing back from the rock walls, were so loud that it seemed to Meggie as if they could be heard all the way to Umbra. The Black Prince posted 6 guards outside. They climbed high into the tops of the surrounding trees. He sent 4 more men back to obliterate their tracks. Doria went as well, and sitting on his shoulder was Jasper, who had attached himself to Doria now that Farid had gone. It was an almost hopeless task to hide the prince of so many small feet, and Meggie could see from the prince's face how much he would have liked to take the children even farther away, far from the Piper and the Milksop's hounds. The Black Prince had let 6 women come with their children, as he knew his men well enough to realize that they weren't much use as foster mothers. Roxanne, Risa, and Minerva helped the women to make the cave more comfortable, laying blankets and lengths of cloth between the rocky walls, bringing in more dry leaves so that everyone could sleep more easily, spreading furs over the leaves and piling up stones to make separate niches where the smallest children could bed down. They made a hearth to cook on, took stock of the provisions the robbers had brought, and kept straining their ears for noises outside, terrified of suddenly hearing the barking of dogs or soldiers' voices.
"See how greedily they're stuffing their little mouths," grunted Snapper, when the Black Prince first had food served to the children. "Our provisions are hardly going to last a week at this rate. And then what?"
"By then, the Adderhead will be long dead," replied the strong man, his tone defiant. But Snapper just laughed scornfully.
"Oh, yes. And the Blue Jay will kill the Piper at the same time, will he? He'll need more than 3 words for that. And what about the Milksop and his men-at-arms?"
Yes, what about them? No one knew the answer to that.
"Violante will throw them all out once her father's dead," said Minerva,
but Meggie still found it hard to trust her ugliness.
"He'll be all right, Meggie," Eleanor kept saying. "Don't look so sad. If I get the hang of this whole story, which isn't so easy, since our good friend the author there likes making things complicated," she added with a reproachful glance at Fenolio, "then they won't touch a hair of your father's head, because he has to cure that book for the Adderhead, which presumably he can't do, but that's another problem. Anyway, you wait and see. Everything will end well."
If only Meggie could have believed her, as she used to believe Mo. "It will be all right, Meggie." That was all he had to say, and she would lay her head against his shoulder in the certain knowledge that he would fix everything. How long ago that was. So very long ago. The Black Prince had sent Gecko's tame crows to Umbra, to the Barn Owl and his informers in the castle, and Risa stood outside the cave for hours on end, searching the sky for black feathers. But the only bird Gecko brought into the cave on the second day was a bedraggled magpie, and in the end, it was Farid, not one of the crows, who brought the news of the blue jay. He was shaking with cold when one of the guards took him to the Black Prince, and his face had the forlorn expression it wore every time Dustfinger had sent him away. Meggie took Eleanor's hand as he stammered out his news. Violante was taking Mo to her mother's castle as her prisoner. Dustfinger would follow them. The Piper had hit and threatened Mo. Violante had been afraid he would kill him. Risa buried her face in her hands, and Roxanne put an arm around her.
"Her mother's castle? But Violante's mother is dead."
By now, Eleanor knew her way around Fenolio's story better than its author himself. She moved among the robbers as if she had always been one of them, got Batista to sing her minstrel songs, asked the strong man to show her how to talk to the birds, and made Jasper explain how many different kinds of glassmen there were. She kept tripping on the hem of her peculiar dress. She had smudges on her forehead and spiders in her hair, but Eleanor looked happier than she had ever been before.
"It's the castle where her mother grew up. Dustfinger knows it."
Farid took a bag from his belt and wiped some soot off the leather. Then he looked at Meggie.
"We made spiders and wolves out of fire to protect your father."
There was no mistaking the pride in his voice. "But all the same, Violante thought he wasn't safe in the castle." Risa's voice sounded accusing. "You can't protect him. In fact, none of you can protect him. He's on his own." The castle in the lake. The Black Prince spoke its name as if he did not particularly like Violante's idea either. There are many songs about that castle.
"Dark songs," added Gecko.
The magpie had flown to him and was perching on his shoulder. It was a skinny bird, and it stared at Meggie as if it would like to peck out her eyes.
"What kind of songs?"
Risa's voice was husky with fear.
"Oh, ghost stories, that's all fanciful nonsense." Fenolio pushed past Risa.
Despina was clinging to his hand.
"The castle in the lake was abandoned long ago, so people fill it with stories, but that's all they are."
"How reassuring."
The glance that Eleanor cast Fenolio made his face turn red. He was in a gloomy mood. Since their arrival at the cave, he had been complaining non-stop about the cold, the crying children, or the stench of the bear. Most of the time, he sat behind a wall of stones he had built in the darkest corner of the cave, quarreling with Rosenquartz. Only Ivo and Despina could get a smile out of him. And Darius, who had joined the old man as soon as they had arrived at the cave, and as he helped Fenolio to build his wall, started timidly asking him about the world he had created. Where do the giants live? Do water nymphs live longer than human beings? What kind of country lies beyond the mountains? Darius obviously asked the right questions, for Fenolio didn't lose patience with him, as he had with Orpheus. The castle in the lake. Fenolio shook his head when Meggie went to him to find out more about the place to which her ugliness was taking her father.
"It wasn't among the main scenes of the story," was all he would say grumpily. "One of many settings, just scenery,
Read my book if you want to know more about it. If Dustfinger ever lets it out of his hands again, that is. If you ask me, he ought really to have given it to me. Although we still don't seem to be on speaking terms. After all, I wrote it. But there we are. At least Orpheus doesn't have it anymore. The book.
In fact, Dustfinger had passed on Inkheart long ago. But Meggie kept that knowledge to herself, for Fareed had asked her to. He had handed it over to her mother as swiftly as if Buster might emerge behind him to steal it, just as he had back in the other world. Dustfinger says it will be safest with you, because you know how powerful the words in it are, he had murmured. The Black Prince doesn't understand that. But keep it hidden, and let nobody know you have it. Orpheus mustn't get it back. Dustfinger is fairly sure, though, that he won't look for it in your hands. Risa had taken the book only with some reluctance, and finally she hid it in the place where she slept. Meggie's heart beat faster as she took it out from under the blanket. She hadn't held Fenolia's book in her hands since Mortola had given it to her in Capricorn's arena to read the shadow into being. It was a strange feeling to open it now that she was in the world it described, and for a moment Meggie feared the pages might suck in everything around her. The rocky ground where she was sitting, the blanket under which her mother slept, the white ice moth that had lost its way in the cave, the children laughing as they ran after it. Had all that really come into existence between these covers? The book seemed so meaningless compared to the marvels it described. Just a few hundred printed pages and a dozen pictures not half as good as those that Balbulus painted, all in a silvery green linen binding. Yet it wouldn't have surprised Meggie to find her own name on the pages, or the names of her mother, Fareed, or Mo. Although, no, her father bore another name in this world. Meggie had never had the chance to read Fenolio's whole story. Where was she to begin now? Was there a picture of the castle in the lake? She was quickly leafing through the pages, when she suddenly heard Fareed's voice behind her. Meggie? She closed the book guiltily, as if every word in it were a secret. How stupid of her. This book didn't know anything about all her fears. It knew nothing of the Blue Jay, nor even of Fareed. She didn't think of him now as often as she used to. It was almost as if, with Dustfinger's return, the chapter about Fareed and herself had ended, and the story was beginning again, extinguishing part of the tale it had told before with every new word. Dustfinger gave me something else to bring back here. Fareed glanced at the book on her lap as if it were a snake. But then he kneeled down beside her and took from his belt the soot-blackened bag that his fingers had been caressing while he delivered his news to the prince. He gave it to me for Roxanne, said Fareed quietly, as he sprinkled a fine circle of ashes on the rocky ground. But you looked really upset, so... He didn't finish his sentence. Instead, he whispered words that only he and Dustfinger understood. And the fire suddenly licked up from the ashes, as if it had been sleeping there. Fareed lured it out, praised and enticed it, until it burned with such heat that the heart of the flames became white as paper, and a picture appeared, difficult to make out at first, then more and more distinct. Hills, densely wooded, soldiers on a narrow path, many soldiers, two women riding among them. Meggie recognized Brianna at once by her hair. The woman in front of her must be her ugliness, and there, with Dustfinger beside him, rode Mo. Meggie instinctively put her hand out to him, but Fareed held her fingers fast. "He has blood on his face," she whispered. "The piper." Fareed spoke to the flames again, and the picture spread out, showing the path turning toward mountains that Meggie had never seen before, much higher than the hills around Ombra. Snow lay on the way ahead, as it did on the slopes in the distance, and Meggie saw Mo breathing into his cold hands. He looked so strange in the fur-trimmed cloak he wore, like a character in a fairy tale. "He is a character in a fairy tale, Meggie," a voice inside her whispered. "The Blue Jay. Was he still her father, too?"
Had Mo ever looked so serious? Her ugliness turned to him. Of course it was her ugliness. Who else?